It wasn't horsey, my family. We were enthusiasts about horse racing as opposed to enthusiasts about the horses, the animals themselves. Oh, apologies. Hello, this is Cornelius Lysett, presenter of the Cornelius Cast. Now, I was just saying that as a child, I didn't have horses or ponies, and I never really wanted them. In fact, the closest I came to horses or ponies was pretending that my bicycle was a horse, racing around the roads against my sister and others. Well, obviously, plenty of people have raced both bicycles and horses, but not that many at a very high level in both areas. Victoria Pendleton is one, two Olympics she won gold medals at, also rode at the Cheltenham Festival in 2016. And another, he might not have been an Olympian, but competing on bicycles at a high level and in racing at a high level, is my guest in the latest episode of the Cornelius Cast. He's Wilson Rennick, once as K Rennick or KW Rennick on the race card, a leading jump jockey, then a professional cyclist, and now back in racing as a jockey's agent, booking mounts. And he's joining us. Hello, how are you? From Inverness, is it?
Yeah, up in Inverness. Thanks for having me on.
Not at all. I read on social media the other day, lockdown hadn't made much difference to you and your bicycle, because there are so many wide open spaces in the Highlands. You feel like it most of the time.
Yeah, I think I'm probably one of the only people that my life didn't change much at all through lockdown. Everything up here was pretty much as usual.
And, you know, for cycling, well, for riding horses as well, but those sort of big open spaces must be absolutely, must be fabulous.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place to live. The outdoor scene up here is amazing.
You say you learn something every day. There's quite a lot of photographs from you on Instagram of cycling around the place. You learn something new every day.
Yeah, I think you could explore this area of the country for years and still find new places to go.
And how many miles might you go in one time on your bicycle?
I think during lockdown, obviously there wasn't much to do apart from ride the bike. So, you know, I could quite easily go out for 5, 6, 7 hours.
How many miles might that be?
Yeah, it depends. You know, 100, 150 miles.
What, in a day?
Yeah.
Doesn't it seem quite a long way, even for you?
Going back 5 years, yeah. But nowadays, with the training and racing and things like that I've done, it isn't a big thing.
What's your longest? What's your furthest, do you think?
The longest ride I've ever done was during a race in the Tour of Estonia, which was 250 kilometres in total.
During a
so
day?
That's a long day.
Well, you mentioned Estonia there. We'll mention other countries that you rode at as well. So making that transition from being a jockey to being a professional cyclist, in one respect, it seems sort of obvious, doesn't it? Because you're a bit like I was just saying with my pretending my bicycle was a horse. You're on a saddle. You're doing the same kind of thing.
Yeah, but you're doing the pedaling rather than the horse doing the work. You're doing the work. So that's obviously the biggest difference. There are similarities in that it's very weight orientated. You have to be very dedicated in both sports, and they're both very hard.
Yeah, and certainly in racing, very dangerous. Cycling, I suppose, as long as nothing goes wrong, the danger's not really there.
Slightly less dangerous, but when it does go wrong, it tends to go wrong worse.
Even worse than racing.
Yeah, because it's very often you lose skin in a horse race, but it's guaranteed you're going to lose some skin in a bike race when it goes wrong.
On the basis that the surface you're going on is that much harder.
Yeah.
So, but in terms of racing, 17th of May 2015, this started it all, because you had this bad fall at Market Raisin. Well, that's 5 years later we're talking now. Your arm, one of your arms, is still affected by that.
Yeah, I left with some nerve damage in my left arm, and it's never really come back to normal. That particular fall is one of those falls where it wasn't actually hitting the ground that did the damage. It was a horse falling behind. I think it hit me with every leg and did various pieces of damage.
And this was a horse called you were riding called Sindar Ban. And what did you reel off what you did? Because it was multiple injuries, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a freak fall. First hurdle, horse jumped it okay, crumpled and landing. And now, like I say, a horse falling behind stood all over me. So I broke my jaw, my collarbone, numerous ribs, fractured my C7 vertebrae, had a big hematoma in my leg. And the thing that was the lasting damage was damage the nerves that go down through under your collarbone into your arm.
And so badly enough for that still to be an issue now, but it wasn't an issue for cycling.
No, well, riding a horse, it's very much related to your upper body and controlling the horse especially, whereas cycling is the complete opposite.
And you were injured to the extent that you got married in a neck brace.
I did, yeah. I think it was 12 days after the fall.
That you got married?
I got married, yeah.
So the wedding photographs are all, when you analyse your face in the wedding photos, how do you look?
Well, to be honest, I can't really remember the wedding too much because obviously I had quite a severe concussion. I can remember it a bit, but it isn't vivid, put it that way. And yeah, all the wedding photos I've got, I'm in a neck brace. I was in that neck brace for 6 weeks. 24 hours a day, wasn't allowed to take it off. So yeah, it was a long 6 weeks.
And so quite a lot of people's wedding days aren't that memorable, normally because of alcohol taken, but yours was for different reasons.
Yeah.
And
there certainly wasn't any alcohol.
Well, because of the drugs you'd have been on.
Yeah.
Gosh, and I'm not thinking, you probably weren't in a position to think about it, but when on the 17th of May you hit the deck, Your wife to be, she must have thought, oh my goodness, are we going to have to do what everyone's doing in 2020 and postpone the wedding by a year?
Well, I think that was probably one of her first thoughts because obviously everything was organised and, you know, just a few days away. So yeah, there was a little bit of pressure to get back on my feet.
How long were you in hospital for?
2 days.
What, with all those injuries you reeled off?
Yeah, they're quite keen to get rid of you nowadays.
Well, yeah, and especially if you're getting married in less than a fortnight, I suppose. Gracious. And you talked about the concussions, and you know, you sent me a text message the other day about this, and I didn't know whether you were joking or not. You said, you know, I've had quite a lot of concussions over the years, because I've always found you very sharp indeed. You suggested you weren't necessarily always 100% sharp, but I can't believe, I'm sure you were joking.
Yeah, slightly, but yeah, the concussions is something that I never really, when I look back on it, I realise now that there was quite a few concussions. And actually my specialist who was dealing with the nerve damage actually said, you do realise that you've had quite a few concussions in quite a short space of time. And in the end, it was obviously the nerve damage that stopped me riding, but it was something that she was concerned about. And I think it's something that maybe we don't take enough notice of, that they do add up.
How many do you think you had over the years?
Over the years, probably 8 or 9.
Right.
Which, I mean, that's probably not uncommon for a jockey, but if you look at other sports, it is a lot.
Well, look at practically every other way of life. But so that 8 or 9 in 15 years, so that's... And did you, when you reflect on it now, did you take it seriously, them seriously enough at the time?
At the beginning of my career, nobody really did. Because it was Dr. Turner who brought in the concussion test and the baseline test, which changed it totally.
This is Dr. Michael Turner of the British Horse Racing Authority.
Yeah, who was the chief medical advisor at the time. And he brought in the concussion tests and your baseline tests, and everybody did take it more seriously after that. But I think I probably had 3 or 4 concussions before it was ever recorded that I had a concussion. Put it that way.
Right. So, and presumably you as a young, enthusiastic sports person, you were just desperate to get back on a horse. So if you had a headache, it wouldn't really have stopped you.
If you got knocked out, you just, as long as you felt like you were okay, you carried on.
And just, you talked about concussion tests and baseline. Is this where, when you're completely concussion-less, you go and fill out a form and so they can then work out the questions to ask you?
Yeah, it's a bit more complicated than that. The baseline test is a series of tests, testing your memory and your reaction times and things like that when you're 100% free of concussion. So if you have a concussion, you can then go back and do the baseline test, which they then compare to see that you've recovered from that concussion.
Oh, so it's not who's the Queen and who's Prime Minister and who's First Minister of Scotland. It's a bit more complicated than that.
Well, the initial test on the race course is... That right. The doctor would do. He would ask you where you are, who you are, name a few other jockeys that are riding on that day, who the Prime Minister is. And if you didn't get enough of those questions right, he would then say, right, okay, you have a concussion, we suspect you have a concussion, you need to do a full concussion test.
There's a very good story about one of your former colleagues, David Bass, who was a supporter of Jeremy Corbyn, and he was asked who the Prime Minister was after a bad fall somewhere. And he said, oh, the Prime Minister's Boris Johnson, but it could be Jeremy Corbyn by the end of next week. so they realised he was probably okay.
Yeah.
Going back to the beginning, your first winner came on January the 26th, 2000, at Sedgefield, a horse called Gem of Holly. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Won by 14 trainer. Lengths.
Yeah, a small trainer called Robert Wood. I think he was a permit holder. Yeah, he was good enough to stick me up in a few before I'd ever ridden a winner. So,
and when you got that first winner under your belt, no, because I think it's probably fair to say you always had quite a reputation of being quite serious as a jockey. But I imagine you must have been, you know, all smiles, all you know, full of joys.
Yeah, I'd actually had quite a few rides without having a winner. So
right.
I was still an amateur at the time, but I'd ridden a point-to-point winner. But I hadn't ridden a winner under rules, so it was a bit of a relief. I think I was getting on for like 40 odd rides, so yeah. Ooh. it was a bit of a relief.
Yeah, well, I'm 14. So did you ever doubt yourself?
I think something that always you obviously you do start to think, is it ever going to happen, and is it me?
And were the horses just not good enough, or were you falling off, or what was going?
I think when you look at it, I was a 7-pound claiming amateur, and people were giving me the odd chance, but you know they weren't putting me on good horses. So it was quite good, because by the time I did ride a winner, I'd got a good bit of experience under my belt.
And you really appreciated it, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, you know, you didn't take off your last couple of full seasons. You rode 46, 61 winners. But in the early years, on the whole, it was a rather smaller number than that, wasn't it?
Yeah, it took a long time to get going, just for a variety of reasons, really. Injuries, obviously, were a big part of my career. At sort of times where I really didn't need them. I was doing okay as an amateur and turned professional and got injured quite soon after that. And then I was getting myself quite well through my claim, and I got injured again just towards the end of that, and then rode out my claim and got injured again. So the first 6-7 years of my career were very stop start.
You mentioned the concussions, but did he break lots of things as well?
Yeah, and just a couple of, I had a freak accident riding out at home. Was the first real bad injury I had, where a horse reared over and landed on me riding out, which kept me off the track, I think, for almost 8 months. So yeah, things like that. I mean, that sort of break early in someone's career, it's almost like starting again.
Easily forgotten.
Yeah. When you're not really that established, it is a bit like starting from scratch.
And I'm just looking at the trainers, the principal trainers you rode for, early days, Mickey Hammond, Peter Monteith, then others, latterly Donald McCain, Keith Dalglish, you've mentioned, Tony Dobbin and his wife Rose, Lenny Lunger, but Howard Johnson, riding for him when he had the millionaire Graham Wiley as his principal owner. I think millionaire's a bit insulting, the billionaire probably, yeah. the founder of the Sage computer programming empire. Sir Graham Wiley now, he put a lot of money in, didn't he? And you were lucky enough to be one of the riders who was riding some pretty good horses.
I enjoyed my time riding for Howard. I was never actually stable jockey to Howard, but for a long time I was second jockey. So when Graham Lee was there, when Paddy Brennan was there, when Dennis O'Regan was there, I was always regularly picking up second string or going to the second meeting. So yeah, I did build up quite a decent relationship with Howard over quite a long period of time.
He was quite a character. Well, he is quite a character, isn't he?
Yeah, but I got on really well with him, and I really enjoyed riding for him.
Hmm. So what were your favourite horse? What are you most gooey-eyed when you reflect on your career?
I think my favourite horse, I'm not the best horse I ever rode, but my favourite horse would be Montoya's Son.
Right.
He was one of the last winners I rode for Howard and Graham Wiley. But then he was also one of the first horse, I think he was the first horse I rode for Richard Gilbert, a Straight Line Construction. So we went on to then be like sort of my biggest supporter, and well, and he's now one of my closest friends. And that horse in particular, just, you know, he took us to some good days out. You know, he ran in the John Hughes in Aintree, and I think he won five or six races for Straight Line Construction. So yeah, the horse that I really enjoyed riding and being involved with.
And you could also mention horses with the names of Lion Guest or Northern Acres, who had a very distinguished owner that you may recall.
Yeah, it was always good pulling on those red and white colours.
Yeah, listeners, I am talking about myself here. But we'd actually, it was quite striking, we'd never had any luck. And then when you finally, you were on, it was Northern Acres at Newcastle, and you won.
Yeah.
I remember being, because I'd followed your career for quite a long time, I thought we're never going to have a winner together. And finally, everyone said, oh, he can't win today, the ground's too soft, the ground's too soft. But he absolutely trotted up.
He did. And he surprised everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And you rather cheekily went on television afterwards and said, well, I suppose Cornelius might smile for a change.
Yeah. Well, yeah, or... I did also hear you were good at giving the odd backhander, but that never came.
Well, you mustn't listen to everything you hear on the grapevine. And there was quite a funny incident, and we must get on to talking about cycling in a second, but there was quite a funny incident. There was a horse called Lion Guest that ran in my colours that really wasn't very good, was he? You schooled him over fences one day and you thought he might be better than he was. So we kept on with him, but he refused in a race at Musselburgh. And I don't know what it's like riding a horse that refuses, but when you own a horse that refuses, it feels really humiliating. So what does it feel like when you ride a horse that goes
well, yeah,
and refuses?
It's never the way you want to end up end up happening. But I think Lion's Guest's problem was not his ability. It was just that he just didn't want to be a racehorse, did he? And that was sort of the final nail in the coffin of his career.
Absolutely, he's been the most lovely riding horse for somebody who just takes him around the field somewhere. Since that there is a version of this story which Wilson will now deny, and very muddy this day, that this horse refused, and he went over the horse's head when it refused to jump the last fence and landed in the mud, and you were nearly unrecognisable. And I've asked a lot of stupid questions over the years, Wilson, but I think the one to you there, should you have pulled him up before he refused, was probably amongst the more stupid questions. And you gave me an answer which we're not going to repeat here, but you've always maintained you were actually referring to the horse and not to me.
I can't actually remember. I've probably concussed because I can't actually remember that incident.
Let's move on. So you had this fall at Market Raisin. Have you ever been on a horse since that day at Market Raisin? Have you ever stood on a horse since?
No, not once.
Ever been tempted?
I'm getting more tempted.
But would a doctor be upset if you did say that you wanted to get on a horse again?
No, not particularly. I mean, obviously riding a race and riding a horse are completely different things. So yeah, it would be okay.
And people talk about jockeys giving up on their own terms. Barry Geraghty recently, McCoy, Walsh, Andrew Thornton. And you said to give up in your own terms is a great achievement for a jump jockey who rides in plenty of races as you did. So do you find that quite hard to deal with the fact that you were forced into giving up?
Yeah, definitely. I think retiring is hard for any jockey. It's a hard thing for any jockey to do. When it's on your own terms, maybe a slightly easier because it can be planned. But when it's against, you know, when it's forced, then it really is hard because you go from all of a sudden having a life that is filled with something to just that not being there. So it is difficult. And to go out on your own terms, I mean, like someone like Leighton Aspel, you know, it's amazing that he did that twice, basically. You know, he had a good career and he decided it was time to retire, decided he'd done it too early, came back, had another good career, and then again retired on his own terms. So yeah, that's a big achievement, I think.
So, and you went all serious when talking there. So you obviously, you would have loved to have been able to plan it.
Yeah, and not only that, I was into the, I don't know, was it like the 14th year of my career or something like that, but I honestly, genuinely didn't think that I was getting towards the end. I just thought I was just getting going. And if you look at the number of winners I was riding and rides I was getting, it backs that up. You know, my last 2 years were my best 2 years. It took me a long time to sort of put together all the pieces of the jigsaw that you have to put together to be a successful jockey. Certain parts of that I used to struggle with, maybe the mental side of things and communication and things like that, that all seemed to be coming together. And it was shown in the results I was getting. So to be forced to retire at that stage was difficult to take.
How long did it take you to get your head around it?
It took quite a while, actually, yeah. And I sort of went away from the sport because I did really resent not being a jockey anymore. You know, I didn't like to watch racing because I wasn't enjoying it for what it was. I was looking at it from the point of view that I wanted to still be doing it. And the fact that I wasn't doing it really got to me for quite a while.
Resent's quite a big word.
Yeah, well, for instance, I would go racing with Richard Gilbert to watch one of his horses run, and it would win, and I should have been happy because we were there to watch the horse run, but I wasn't because I wasn't on it.
And you went away from racing into cycling, though you'd sort of... You knew that you were going to go in that direction. So you'd been to Liverpool John Moores Hospital, University, Liverpool John Moores University.
And a few hospitals.
And there's this guy called Dr. George Wilson, who's a sort of dietitian, nutritionist, is he, that kind of stuff?
This was before I retired that I was involved with George. And yeah, he is a sports scientist, basically, yeah.
But so you had this, do you call it a VO2 max test?
Yeah.
I'm really interested. So this VO2 max test measures lung capacity, yeah?
Yeah, basically it measures how many litres per kilogram of oxygen your lungs can process.
And the cyclist Chris Froome can process quite a lot, but the jockey Wilson Rennick could process even more.
Well, yeah, so that was the result of the VO2 max test, yeah.
So have you been in the wrong game all the time?
Well, at the time I thought that, but having learned more about it, obviously that test just tells you how much your body can process. It also depends what your body does with that oxygen once you've processed it. And that's something that you have to sort of, that has to be identified at quite a young age.
Right.
So that you can develop that to reach your full potential as an athlete.
So when you knew you had this lung capacity, you then had to work out what to do with it.
Well, I didn't plan to do anything with it until I was forced to retire.
Right. And did it automatically push you towards cycling?
Yeah, well, I was already doing it. Already doing cycling quite a bit. When I was forced to retire, I really quickly realised that I needed to find something to focus on. Because obviously not being a jockey anymore leaves a big hole in your life. And that was the obvious thing to focus on.
You came up with a really interesting quote. Everyone finds something, you said. After racing, a lot of people find the bottle. So presumably you were keen, like Richard Dunwoody was very keen when he was also forced to give up a riding through injury, to obsess about having obsessed about one thing. You need to obsess about something else.
Yeah, well, like I say, I think it does leave, whether it's planned or unplanned, retiring does leave a big hole in your life. So you need to fill it with something. And it's far better that something being something good and healthy.
Yeah. So how long did it take from the fall at Market Raisin for you to be taking cycling pretty seriously?
Well, I was using it as part of my rehab.
Yeah.
To keep my fitness up and my weight down. And then probably a year after the fall, basically the closer I was getting to not being able to ride anymore, the closer I was getting to taking up the cycling more seriously.
Right. And was that hard?
No, I didn't find it hard because I really enjoyed it. It was hard physically, yeah. But I really enjoyed it. So I never found it hard mentally or hard to be motivated to do it.
And presumably it's just you and this machine as opposed to you and a horse. So therefore that's potentially more straightforward.
Well, it takes that reliance on the horse's performance out of the equation. So it is a little bit more that the harder you work, the harder you train, the more dedicated you are, the more likely you are to succeed.
And age-wise, you were 36, I think, 35, 36, that kind of age.
35, yeah.
35. You said age is the thing that's a lot in your head, people were inclined to say, he's much too old to be doing this. But was that another example of people saying that? You thought, I'm going to bloody well prove them wrong.
Yeah, a bit of that. But I also, you know, I read a lot of books about cycling, cyclists, athletes, sports science. And the thing that you find is a lot of athletes, once they've retired, they'll admit that they actually retired, not because their body couldn't do it anymore, but because their head couldn't.
Right.
So they'll lose that desire and haven't done something for a long time. So coming to an older age, yeah, okay, your body maybe isn't going to last forever.
Mm.
But if your mind's fresh to that sport or that game, then there's no reason why you can't get on and do it at that age.
Would you have liked to have done it for what you've seen now of cycling compared to what you've seen of racing? Would you have liked to have started cycling when you started racing?
Yes and no. The time that I've spent in cycling and the experience I've had of it, I really enjoyed it, and I would like to have experienced more of that. But at the same time, I wouldn't like to give up what I experienced within horse racing.
So you enjoy it. You enjoy how much you resented giving up. You still loved it.
Yeah, I loved it, and the fact that, you know, I met my wife in horse racing. I've met some really fantastic friends in horse racing. So without horse racing, I wouldn't have any of that.
Some great journalists.
Some.
I have to tell you, listeners, that when he retired, he rang me up and he said, somebody said, find a friendly journalist and get them to do the story about you retiring. And he said, I'm afraid I couldn't find any of them. They're all out. So I've rung you. and this cycling, it's taken you around the world, hasn't it? Reel off a few countries that you've competed in cycling-wise.
I've been to China, Hong Kong, all over Europe. South America, Caribbean.
Africa,
yeah.
You've actually, you took part in is it called the Tour de Senegal or whatever the big event is?
Tour de Senegal, yeah.
Yeah, and you tweeted or social mediaed really quite movingly about the haves and have-nots. You actually saw a lot of different things as you cycled around the world.
In Africa especially, yeah. The Tour de Senegal was the only race I did in Africa, which was West Africa, and yeah, it was a real eye opener. Let's put it that way. And you definitely came back realizing how lucky we are in this country.
Mm. And when you did the Tour de Guyane in French Guiana, South America. A newsreader in French is trying to get her tongue around Wilson Rennick as the winner of one of the stages,
yeah.
which was quite funny. I imagine, though, if it had been a newsreader from Hoyt trying to get their tongue around a Guyanan name, it might have been similarly tricky.
I don't think a Hoyt accent would have managed the Guyan name. All the races over in South America are live on TV. It's a great experience.
And did you get on as well with, or how did you find your fellow cyclists compared to your fellow jockeys? Was that
a lot of similarities in with the weighing room? In that, yeah, during the race, everybody's competing against each other, but afterwards at the meal tables, or you know, on the way to the races, things like that, it's all very quite close knit.
And have you given that up? You've given that up now, haven't you? Because you're back in racing as a jockey's agent.
I was in a UCI professional team 2 years ago, and that team went bust.
Right.
And the year after, probably because of my age, I didn't find another team to go to. I've not really raced at that level for 2 years now.
But you do it recreationally.
It's a great way to just sort of get away from everything for a couple hours, go and clear your head.
And on the 5th of June, you tweeted, back in the game, brackets, almost, as a jockey's agent. So you're going to represent, initially anyway, well, the first two jockeys were Conor O'Farrell and Craig Nicol.
Yeah, and Billy Garrity has since joined.
Right. So your string is growing.
Yeah.
It must be quite hard to be taking on, presumably, somebody who was once your agent. So that's quite difficult in one respect. And you've been away for a few years, but you do sort of, regardless of the form book, you get the life of a... I'm guessing you get the life of a jockey.
Yeah, it's...
Well, I hope you do after all this time.
Yeah, well, when I came into it, I've got no illusion. It's not going to be easy. You know, it isn't an easy job to do. And if you look at the people that are already doing it, they're very experienced, very established. it isn't going to be easy. But like everything else I've got into, I'll give it, you know, 110% and work as hard as I can towards making it as an agent.
And Conor O'Farrell, who's seen as very much one of the stalwarts now of the North, he's already on the winning sheet for the new season. Craig Nicol used to be, he was the champion conditional jockey. He's probably had a quieter time, hasn't he? He's probably a good project to have.
Both in the same bracket where their early career was very good. Craig was champion conditional. Conor rode Cheltenham Festival winner for David Pipe. And they've maybe hit a slight plateau in their career. They're not quite where they want to be. Yeah, we've basically sat down and discussed where they are now and where they think they should be, where they would like to be, and made a plan for how we're going to get from where they are now to where they want to be. And it's, you know, I think just highlighted things that we can work on and different things we can do to try and get a bit more success, more winners, more rides and more winners.
And presume you've got all those contacts so you can ring up people and say, hey, remember I rode you that winner at Sedgefield a million years ago? How about putting Conor or Craig up on your horse?
You have, yeah, the contacts are there. And obviously, you know, I've done it. And I think one of the main things that I sort of know what jockeys are going through on that sort of day-to-day basis. And, you know, the stresses and the strains and the pressure. And, you know, I think it's all very good just, you know, getting a jockey opportunities. But it's also important, I feel, for to be able to make sure that jockey's in the right place to be able to take advantage of those opportunities.
Right place mentally?
Right place mentally, yeah. Definitely mentally, because it's...
As horse well as physically.
Horse racing is such a mental thing. You know, you have to be able to handle being beat, maybe not riding horses you think you should be riding. And you have to be able to put all that things to the back of your mind, forget about them and concentrate on your next race. Or it does start to affect your performance.
And you had to do that yourself once upon a time.
Yeah, and it's something that I really struggled with for a long time and something that I feel probably held me back in my career, which is why I think towards the end of my career, when I really learned how to cope with that and handle that side of things, I started having more success.
I'm just wondering, because you did have a reputation for being quite sort of straight-talking in your riding days. I wonder if you've rung up anyone to say, can one of my jockeys ride your horse? And they've said, do you remember how rude you were to me at Carlisle 15 years ago?
Well, it hasn't happened yet, but I'm sure it will.
And for you, it'll be good to be, I guess, to be back involved. You're not up on the horse, even though you sort of hinted that you might get back on a horse at some point, maybe a charity race or something like that. Well, that'd be great.
Yeah, possibly. But it is, I'm really enjoying being back involved, getting back in touch with some of the people that I maybe lost touch with when I was having a little time away from the sport. I'm now actually really enjoying the sport for what it is, which is a fantastic sport to be involved in.
Well, excellent. Well, look, thanks for talking today. And I'm really pleased you're back, because whatever you said to me that day at Musselburgh, we did have quite a lot of quite amusing times with those few horses. And that day when we finally managed to get a winner together at Newcastle actually did matter quite a lot. Though I do remember it won a handicap and he won by quite a long way. And I remember saying to you, I thought you boys from Hoy could be a bit sharper than to win a race by 12 lengths when you only need to win by two. Which I think you maybe swore at me again. Anyway, I'm really pleased you're back. Best of luck with finding them lots of winners. I hope you're taking your percentage from Cheltenham Gold Cups and Grand Nationals and Scottish Nationals and all sorts of other big races in the future. So best of luck. And if you do get back on a horse, I'm going to be there. I can't wait. It would be great to see the KW Rennick magic back on a horse once again. So thanks very much indeed. Thank you to you for listening to this latest episode of the Cornelius Cast. If you'd like to make certain that you never miss one, then please subscribe. Actually, do you know, whether it's good news or bad news, we'd love to hear your review of the Cornelius Cast. We'll chat again soon.